So Romans chapter 12 and verse 9. By the way, there are the itineraries at the back. That was kind of a quick overview, but they give more details. Romans 12, 9. We're talking about how we ought to live based upon all that God has done for us as described in Romans 1 through 11. God just made such a great loving sacrifice, planning and purposing for us to be right with Him. By His grace, by the sacrifice of His Son, He's provided in every way hope and victory and salvation for us. And based upon those mercies, He said in chapter 12 and verse 1, we ought to take ourselves and present ourselves to God as a living sacrifice. We ought to give ourselves to God. And He talked about what that meant in personal terms in verses 3 through 8. Now He talks about what that means in terms of a relationship with each other. When we think about all God's done for us, how should we relate to each other? Verse 9, let love be without hypocrisy. And that's a kind of an interesting way that it's said. If you notice your italicized words, at least in the New American Standard, really, there's no verb there. That verse just starts out, sincere love, period. You don't really need a verb. What you need is sincere love. Now, love can't be hypocritical. What would that mean? What would hypocritical love be? What would be pretended love, faked love? You know, some people are really nice to your face, and they'll tell you how much they love you and how much they care about you, and as soon as you walk away, they're telling everybody else how terrible you are. Or we can put on kind of a facade of caring and concern and love, when really all we care about is ourselves, and we want to make sure you think we love you so that you'll accept us and help us. So there's a lot of people who ingeniously counterfeit some kind of a veneer of love. But He means for us to really love, for us to care and be concerned about and seek to help our brothers, not superficially, but deeply and profoundly. And that's really what this section is about. It's about how to show sincere love to our brethren. So what's that going to mean? There's so many ways, so many aspects of love. There's a lot of things to say. You remember that chapter in 1 Corinthians 13 that talked about love and describes it with just so many different adjectives and phrases, because there's just a lot to understanding how love acts in various situations. So He says, abhor what is evil, cling to what is good. Love stands up for what's right. Love is not just pleasing the person loved. Love is seeking the true best interests of the person who's loved. There's a difference. You know, the person who's just trying to make somebody happy will tell them whatever they want to hear. We'll just go along with them, tolerate them, indulge them in anything they like. But somebody who truly loves someone will want them to do the right thing. They're not neutral about moral things. They care about the loved one being right, doing right. And so they hate evil. A loving person hates evil. And they hate evil in the person they love, because evil is incompatible with what's best for that person. You remember the proverb in Proverbs 13 and verse 24, talking about the parents' responsibility to the children, Proverbs 13:24, he who withholds his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him diligently. Now, I think that almost doesn't sound right. I mean, you would think that if you loved your child, you'd never spank them, right? That's what some people think. That the loving thing is you wouldn't punish because you don't want to make them unhappy. But more discerning parents understand that loving appropriate discipline helps them be better. You do it because you care about them. I'm not talking about discipline where I'm just venting my anger at my child, but discipline for the benefit of the child. May be painful. It may not be what the child wants right then, But we understand that it's the best thing in training and helping them. So when I love my brother, I'm seeking what's best for him, not necessarily what he wants. I'm not just trying to please him, I'm trying to help him be what he ought to be. So love abhors evil and clings to what's good. So that's an aspect of love. True love, seeking good for our brethren. Then he says in verse 10, be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Outside the Bible, from what I understand, that term brotherly love in Greek was only used for the physical family. Family love, you know, the kind of attachment and closeness that you expect in a family. It's not surprising that Paul uses that here for the love of Christians for each other, right? Because in God's way of looking at it, we're all family. We've been born again into this family. God's our Father, and our brothers and sisters are brothers and sisters. We don't just call each other that because we have something, we want to say something we don't like Mr. and Mrs. It's because we really are family. We see ourselves that way. And the love we have for each other ought to be as strong as family ties. That means a lot, and it probably means a lot of change. I mean, you don't feel like family to people that you happen to go to the same club every once in a while together and see each other and say hi. You may like those people. You may think they're nice or fine or what you know about them is good, but family involves a greater closeness than that, a greater sense of connection. If all we do is show up here some and say, hi, how you doing? I'm great. Good to see you. We're probably not going to have much of a family love for each other. It requires an investment of time and energy to get close to each other and to develop those bonds. Which is one reason why it's so important that we really seek to love and care about each other. That we spend time with each other. That we pray for each other. That we seek to help each other. That it's not just we do what's convenient, but we go out of our way to develop a family relationship with each other. Then he says, give preference to one another in honor. We ought to honor and exalt each other. That's hard because of ego. You know, I kind of like honor and I don't want you to have it. You know, isn't that the way we are? You know, you make sure you respect me enough. You make sure you are giving me my proper respect. But we don't necessarily want to honor others. Well, if you love, you're not worried about the honor you get. You worry about giving it. In fact, the verb suggests outdoing each other in honoring your brother. That's what my margin says, outdo one another in showing honor. You show more honor to your brother than they show to you. You exalt and respect him more than he does you, which requires, again, a lot of self-denial, a lot of thought. I need to know you. I need to understand what honors and encourages you. And I'm working harder to serve you than what you work to serve me. You know, that's just not very natural for us. We mostly want to treat others the way we think they treat us. You be nice to me, I'll be nice to you. You're not nice to me, I won't be nice to you. Isn't that the kind of the norm in society? It shouldn't be the norm among us, because love seeks what's best for the other, outdoes the other in love. You know, we're not just loving because that person loved me. I love my enemies. I love the one who doesn't love me. Isn't that what Jesus did for us? Isn't that what his love meant for us? What if Jesus only loved the people who treated him good? Where would that have put us? So we really seek to go beyond what our brother does in loving and serving. We're not restricted to, well, he didn't really treat me very well. He didn't show me a whole lot of respect. I don't think he really likes me. So I'm not going to really like him. It's not like that in Christ. in the love we should have for each other. Look at verse 11. Not lagging behind in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. There's your enthusiasm. Christians can't be sluggish, slothful, lazy, kind of settling into sort of a rut. We've got to be diligent and fervent. And I suspect in this context, he's really primarily thinking of that in terms of our love. We work hard. We're very enthusiastic in loving our brethren. Although this would apply to other things as well. We need to be diligent and fervent in serving the Lord in every area. Now, he perhaps puts that serving the Lord in at the end of verse 11 so that we understand that we're not just supposed to be energetic and enthusiastic. We need to channel that in the direction of the Lord. You know, you could be really energetic and enthusiastic in wrong activities. Well, you put your energy into serving the Lord and doing what the Lord wants you to do. We're not trying to just get by with as little work and inconvenience as possible as we love one another. We're willing to put ourselves out and really turn up the intensity and energy level in terms of giving ourselves to our brethren and caring about them and serving them. And then he says, contributing to the needs of the rejoicing in hope, persevering in tribulation, devoted to prayer. So God wants us to keep going in difficult times. Persevering. Now, our perseverance depends a lot on our hope, focusing on the Lord and being with him, and a lot on our being devoted to prayer. Which being devoted to prayer means that I deliberately choose to focus my mind on prayer. I decide I'm going to talk to the Lord. As we're praying and hoping, we persevere. There's a lot of discouraging stuff in general in our life. And there are a lot of times that it's like, well, I might as well just give up. Not if we have hope. And not if we're praying. Those contribute to persevering, and maybe even persevering in the sense of continuing to love one another in difficult circumstances. And our hope and our prayer life will help motivate us to keep doing that. Then look at verse 13. Contributing to the needs of the saints. In other words, eagerly helping brethren in need. Isn't it ironic that I think there are times when, as people become more prosperous, they become less generous? It surely ought to work the other way, right? The more we're prospered, the more we ought to be eager to share that. But I'm not sure that's really so much the way it works. We're really prospered. We ought to be eager to be generous. We ought to have the spirit, if I've got a dime, you've got a nickel. You know, that we want to share. And of course, that depends on a heart and an attitude of caring about and wanting to bless my brethren. It's not just a matter, okay, I'll give you some money. It's a matter, I care about you, and I want to serve you, and I'm willing to give myself, my time, my energy, my money, or whatever would be helpful to you. And then practicing hospitality. Literally pursuing hospitality. That's what my margin says. Not just showing it when you're kind of shamed into it, you know. Every once in a while, well, I guess I'm going to have them over. They had me over, you know. No, it's not like that. It's taking initiative. It's being eager to seek opportunities to be hospitable. Now, hospitality can be, and it's not necessarily bad, but it's not everything in hospitality. It can just be, you know, spending time with our best friends, you know, doing something that we enjoy doing in each other's homes. Well, that's not bad. And we hope, as brethren, as family, we do enjoy each other. We do enjoy doing things together, and that's an encouragement to us. But hospitality needs to be going beyond just spending time in each other's homes with our best friends. You remember what Jesus said in Luke chapter 12, Luke chapter 14. Luke 14, verse 12. And he also went on to say to the one who had invited him, when you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors. Otherwise, they may also invite you in return, and that will be your repayment. But when you give a reception, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed, since they do not have the means to repay you, for you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. When you're being hospitable, make especially sure you're hospitable to the people who can't pay you back, to the people who really need you to be involved with them and care about them. Being hospitable to your best friends is not quite the same thing. It's not bad, but it's not the same thing as really seeking to take initiative with people who need the help. And you know, the truth is, those people that he describes there, the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, you're probably going to have to pursue hospitality with them. They're probably not going to pursue it. They're probably going to be kind of standoffish. They're going to probably feel insecure. And you're probably going to have to get involved with them. And you know, do some things outside of your comfort zone to reach out to them and to encourage them and to involve yourself with them and to develop a relationship where they're comfortable coming to your home and spending time, and you're trying to encourage and help and build them up. This pursuing hospitality is more than just, you know, sending out a couple invitations or telling a couple people, why don't you come over? There are some times when we may really have to work to show hospitality and to be involved in people's lives. The people who need it the most are often the most reluctant to receive it because of insecurity or because of other interests or whatever. So if I'm pursuing hospitality, I'm really sticking my neck out to try to show it to people who may not be as easy to show it to. And then, verse 14, bless those who persecute you, bless and do not curse. Interestingly, the word persecute is the same as the word practice in verse 13. Bless those who pursue you. He was talking about pursuing hospitality. Now, what about the people who chase you in terms of persecution? Well, bless them and don't curse them. Respond to your enemies with good. It is not easy to do that. I mean, man. Somebody mistreats me? What do we instinctively want to do? Get them back. And he's saying, don't do that. There may even be brethren who persecute me in some way, who badmouth me, who speak against me, who seek to hurt me in some way. Bless them. Don't curse them. That attitude of non-vengeance. We'll talk about that a lot more in the next section. Because he'll deal with a whole section worth of that. But that is so countercultural. And it's almost treated as a virtue that I don't let anybody mess with me. You know, if they treat me right, great. If they don't, I defend my honor. It's almost like it's a virtue to make sure that I get them back. I wouldn't want to let anybody, you know, do something wrong to me that I don't hurt back. I mean, that'd almost be like beneath manliness or something like that. We've really got to retrain our thinking to have a biblical view of blessing and not cursing our enemies. Jesus said that quite a few times. So we need to stop and think about that, and we'll do that more the next time we look at Romans. Then verse 15. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. This is this mutual sympathy, compassion, concern, where I care about somebody else so much that I kind of enter into their emotions. I feel with them. I identify with them. Now, that takes a lot of unselfishness. Isn't that a common theme whenever we talk about love? Is that we can't be thinking about ourselves. I got to be thinking about and caring about what you feel, what you're going through, your joys and your sorrows. That is challenging. It's easier to be indifferent toward others because we're cut off in ourselves. It's easy to think so much about us I don't have any time to think about anybody else. You think about it. How much time do we spend thinking about our own selves and our own joys and sorrows versus how much time do we spend thinking about other brethren's joys and sorrows? It is hard to get out of ourselves and to care and to help and to serve, because we got everything about us front and center in our vision. But he says, rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. Now, have you ever thought about which is harder? Is it harder to rejoice with those who rejoice? Or is it harder to weep with those who weep? You might think about that for a second. My answer may not be the same one you'd give. I think it's harder to rejoice with those who rejoice. You understand why? It evokes some jealousy. Oh, so things are going well in your life. Now, if you've got it really bad, you know, it's easier to sympathize. At least I don't have it bad. I can sympathize with you. You know, sorry about it, that. But man, you're doing great. You're really healthy. You got a clean bill of health. I didn't. You got a promotion in your work and I got laid off. You know, you've got a lot of encouraging circumstances. Your family's good. Mine's not. You know, and so on and so forth. When things are going well for you, well, what about me? You know, rejoicing with you when you have something to rejoice about is a challenge. Do we really love our brethren? So we need to have that kind of concern, compassion, and sympathy. And then he says in verse 16, be of the same mind toward one another. Do not be haughty in mind, but associate with the lowly. Do not be wise in your own estimation. Don't look down on lowly people, you know, people socially beneath me. You know, don't be prideful. Don't think of yourself too highly. I mean, you think about Jesus. He came down as a man. Wow, that was a come down. You think about where he was before. And he was close to men. You know, he loved them. He served them. He washed the disciples' feet. He lowered himself and humbled himself to serve people that socially were incredibly beneath him. But he wanted to serve. We get all lifted up with how important we are and how great we are, and it's hard for us to put up with people a little bit less than we are. You know, of course, we're always above nearly everybody. And other people, well, they're just a mess. And, you know, it's easy for us just to kind of, you know, just so hard to deal with people so inferior. We need to humble ourselves and we need to love those who are lowly. Sometimes those who seem lower than us may not be, when, especially the way God looks at that. And he hates pride. And he respects the humble. So these are just, you know, these statements that Paul makes here help us think about what love means in application. I think love is one of those words that we could use so easily and it means so little, that stopping and really reflecting on, okay, here's what love really amounts to, here's what it does, will help us verify that we really are loving sincerely. We're going to reread this section and then we'll stand and sing. Sincere love. Abhor what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Outdo one another in showing honor. Not lagging behind in diligence. Fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope. Persevering in tribulation, devoted to prayer, contributing to the needs of the saints, pursuing hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. Be of the same mind toward one another. Do not be haughty in mind, but associate with the lowly. Do not be wise in your own estimation. Let's stand and sing.